Saved your plate.
No, thanks. I'm not hungry.
You're going to want to try the omelet and the bacon.
And the waffle.
Oh, my God, this is delicious.
Told you.
At the time of transmission, the Peregrine was making an unscheduled emergency landing on a Class L planet, Vallejo Beta 5.
Emergency landings ever scheduled?
The ship made its descent, but its beacon went out mid-transmission.
Destroyed on impact. What, do you have the... Where's the...
Extra cheese? Mm.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Positively Trek Book Club. I'm your host, Dan Gunther, flying solo this week. But we've got an exciting episode for you, a little different from our usual book club episodes. Today, we will be talking to author Chelsea Munro Castle, who has written the Star Trek Cookbook, which just came out yesterday, September 20th, 2022. We will have links in the description for you to pick that up if you don't already have it. And I would really encourage you to check out this interview, this book. I've had it for a few days now and have been able to flip through it and check out some of the recipes and some of the really cool Star Trek references. It really is worth it for fans of Star Trek who are also foodies. And even if you're not much of a foodie, this book might just make you one. I'm definitely eager to try some of the recipes in this book. So without further ado, let's welcome Chelsea into the podcast and talk to her about the all-new Star Trek Cookbook. So a little different this week on the Positively Trek Book Club, as I've said, we're talking about the Star Trek Cookbook, and we are honored to have the author, Chelsea Munro Castle, with us to talk about it. So Chelsea, welcome to Positively Trek.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here today.
Excellent. Well, I love that we're talking about this book because it's Positively Trek, and there are no more positive experiences I can think of than gathering with friends and family for great food. And I love that we have this resource now to be able to do that with a bit of a Star Trek flair to it.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And that's really sort of where I was coming from putting the cookbook together. You know, I wanted it to be obviously very approachable, very user-friendly, but also as canon as I could possibly make it, because I know what fandoms are like. but so I tried to get it very, very right.
Yeah, I mean, we're famous as being very patient and accepting, and yeah, all of that. Yeah, of course.
Well, it's that attention to detail, though, that honestly made the cookbook happen, though. Like, I cannot imagine how much longer it would have taken without resources like Memory Alpha. Like, I shudder to think.
Yeah. Shout out to the good folks over at Memory Alpha and Memory Beta for their tireless efforts. It's wild, the stuff that, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you, because I was kind of reading your background, and you've done many tie-in cookbooks before, like for Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, Game of Thrones, which I got to pick that up now. Firefly, World of Warcraft, so many more. What draws you to doing projects like this?
Well, I am a huge nerd, for starters. I think that's a good qualifier. I've got sort of a treasure hunting streak in my genetics, I think. And so I love the hunt, right? The searching for, you know, whether it's gemstones somewhere or the correct recipe, you know, the recipe that's the best fit. And so I think that that really sort of weirdly scratches that itch for me, especially when it comes to some of the historical cookery that I've done and trying to really sort of parse Middle English in some cases or older and try and figure out, you know, reading it out loud to try and figure out what on earth they're talking about, and then trying to turn that into a workable modern recipe. And it's also just, it's, you know, everybody's got to eat, right? It's as convenient as it would be to have replicators. We don't yet. So if, you know, if you can make dinner more interesting and more fun, why not, you know?
Absolutely.
To experience favorite fandoms in a new way.
Oh, excellent. I also see that living abroad in Turkey really kind of gave you a passion
Yes.
for new and interesting food. That really spoke to me. I spent 2 years teaching English in South Korea, and
Oh,
I
wonderful.
lament that my town is too small to have a Korean restaurant. So anywhere, anytime I
Oh.
go somewhere, I got to get that. And I've tried my hand at it, and I'm not bad, but
But
I
it
just...
nothing beats the real thing. Oh.
Exactly. Yeah. And I can totally see how that would really influence you to like search out these new and interesting ways. And also the thing you say about gastro diplomacy, right? You know, this idea of bringing cultures together over food, which is really
Absolutely.
spoke to me.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, part of this was written in, you know, peak pandemic when we couldn't come together to enjoy food together. And so it's sort of, there's a touch of longing in there. That's maybe where that came from. But my wish now, you know, with all these amazing new shows coming out is, you know, we've got three new premieres lined up pretty soon, two or three. At, you know, why not have a premiere party with friends? Like, how fun would that be?
Oh,
so
yeah.
I need to put together a couple menus for us, but we've got Picard and Discovery and Strange New Worlds again, and it's just so much to be excited about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's one thing that before the pandemic, my friends and I always got together to watch Star Trek, and we're all nerds too. So Star Trek, Star Wars, we had something before all of this called the Porg Party, and we had all these themed foods like
Wonderful.
Porgs in a blanket, sweet and sour boneless porg. It was great. And
Love
my
it.
only regret is we didn't have your Galaxy's Edge cookbook, because I bet you there's some really cool stuff in there too. For that
That's
would
true.
have
They wouldn't let me cook porg for that, though, I will
oh.
say. So you got to bring your own porg recipes. But
Yeah.
I feel like they're sort of the tribbles of Star Wars, right? It's
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you could do
Yeah.
spatchcocked porg. Just use the tribble recipe.
I was going to say we've got to talk about the spatchcocked tribble recipe, because I wasn't expecting when I opened this book to have moments where I flipped the page and laughed out loud. And sitting by myself in a room, flipped that saw spatchcock tribble and audibly laughed. Like, my
I
wife
love
upstairs
that.
Was like, "Are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm fine."
Oh, that's terrific. Well, that one was obviously inspired by that amazing short track that gives us the origin story of the tribble, which is just, I can't get enough of that one. It makes me laugh so hard every single time. And he's just standing there. It's like, I did it though. I did it. I made the tribbles. Like, I mean, well, there you go, right? I made the tribbles.
Oh, perfect.
These are now, I got these as a photo prop for the book, and they are everywhere in the house. Completely.
Oh. You left them alone
as
with the Quadra Triticale,
guess,
so.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
Excellent. Well, your comment about writing this during the pandemic, I think that idea of togetherness and that yearning for that really comes across. There's a quote in the Welcome Cadets section at the start. The experience of togetherness is one that cannot be replicated. And I love that for the pun, but
yeah,
also,
yeah.
You know, thinking about that during the pandemic, that makes sense that that was
yeah.
something that was kind of forefront on your mind there.
Well, and it's also sort of a slight defense of the cookbook, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, why do you even need a Star Trek cookbook? They all have replicators. So, I mean, kind of, but we still see so many people cook in all of the different series. Enterprise has its chefs, it's pre-replicator, sort. I mean, they get complicated, but basically pre-replicator. But even, you know, obviously we get Neelix later on. Captain Pike. I mean, why they didn't give me a sneak peek at that before my deadlines? Like,
oh man. Well, I mean, this is jumping maybe to the end of the interview, but does that mean possibly maybe we'll get a follow-up? Because
I would love to. I'm insufferable to watch these with now, because I'm constantly pausing it and taking notes. I'm just like, I'm so irritating to watch shows with. Did you see that? Was that a sausage, or do you think that was more like a meatball? Like, shut up and watch the show. Go back later. I'm trying to be better, but not very good.
I love it. I feel like I'm the same, especially when it comes to Star Trek. Like, maybe the first time through, I'm not doing that, but I've rewatched these so many times. You know,
yeah.
you're always pausing
yeah.
and like, oh, you can make out what it says on that computer graphic. What is that?
Yeah, exactly. There's definitely room for more. Someone suggested even sending myself on one of those the Star Trek cruises and seeing if I could do a cooking bit with Anson Mount. And I was like, do you think I could? Like, that sounds like a dream job for me. But
that would be great. Yeah,
that'd be hysterical. Oh, so I dwell on that every now and then. That just sort of lives rent free back here as a what if.
That's awesome. And I've heard that Anson Mount or Captain Pike's predilection for cooking is taken from Anson Mount. So I
definitely
think
gives the impression of a man who knows the way around a kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I love that they went with that, you know, and they just, he's got the big rack of ribs and all kinds of things. I've since screenshotted, you know, little canapes and things. But
oh, man. Excellent. Well, let's talk a little bit about the dishes in here then, because I have to admit, like, I'm a huge Deep Space Nine fan. I love them all, but Deep Space Nine just has a special place in my heart. I flip to that first page after the sauces, the first section, and it's Syrup of Squill, and I'm like, I know that episode. Yeah. I get that reference. So many of these dishes come from, you know, one-off mentions in episodes, films, and even games and books, which blows my mind. We'll get to that. What was the process like coming up with some of these recipes when in a lot of cases there's initially very little to go on, sometimes even just a name?
Sure. Complicated and involved is the short answer. I always start with a lot of lists. So obviously the first list is everything I know has to go in, everything that people are going to be expecting, you know, plomeek soup, little food cubes, ractagino, so everything that off the top of your head as a Trek fan, you're like, well, if it doesn't have that, like, what are you even doing? So that's the first list. Second list then is something along the lines of everything that I think sounds good, you know, pulling from the memory alpha and memory beta lists, so conveniently assembled for my benefit. running through that and saying, well, what sounds good, you know, and even subdividing that into like fruits or vegetables or seasonings, things like that. So that later on, you know, I say, well, I've got this idea for a thing with jam on top. What kind of jam could it be? And I can reference back to that and say, udaberry, we'll make it udaberries. And then you have to look at what does udaberry taste like? Let's decide. And then it's a matter of sort of subdividing that into main courses, drinks, desserts, things like that, and balancing, seeing where I need a few more things, trying to build off of that. And then just kind of going from there. If I happen to have saved something that I've seen over the years that looked really cool, but didn't fit into anything I was working on, maybe this is the moment for that. So I've kind of got a couple secret Pinterest boards of just weird stuff that I've hoarded over time.
Yeah.
It's a lot on the front end before even getting to the kitchen.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I mean, you can tell the labor that went into this and the, you know, it's so involved and there's so much thought put into a lot of these that some of the recipes, I'll look at them and I'll be like, I never thought of using that for that. That's so clever. I love that.
Oh, fabulous. No, that's always what I want. And I always get a little nervous before the books are out, any of the new cookbooks, because it's a big deal. You know, it's sort of diving headfirst right into the middle of the fandom and the world and the lore and everything else. It's a lot of pressure, but it's also a huge honor. You know, I get to maybe answer very minor questions that people have had about, you know, what do they call those food cubes? Well, now they've got a name. So
I got to say the food cubes, like you have the kind of mind I think that's perfect for this book, because when I got to that page and I saw them, I was like, I didn't even think of those. The little, I think they were like wooden blocks they used. I don't know.
Sometimes they used melon, like cantaloupe. So some of them are like technically edible, but melon and food coloring does not a recipe make. So, and I went through a lot of, that was one of the most difficult recipes to really pin down, I think.
That one was exciting to me with the glutinous rice flour. And I was like, I know exactly the texture of these now. Yep. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and then you can, you know, the combinations of colors and flavors are limitless just based on what kind of extracts you have or can obtain. So you can really make it your own and play with it. I think that's pretty cool.
Ah, excellent. Yeah. I so want to just throw a party now where, you know, this is like a featured dish and so colorful and beautiful.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
This episode of Positively Trek would not be possible without our supporters on Patreon. Thank you all so much who have donated to keep the show going, including our Constitution Class supporters Joyce Marin, Justin Ozer, Jim Stoffel, Jesse Earl, Dave Garcia, Rick Young, and Paul D. Kinnear. Thank you all so very much. We really do appreciate it. If you'd like to support Positively Trek, simply go to patreon.com/positivelytrek. You can join at one of our many levels and get early access to episodes, ad-free versions of episodes, associate producer credits, in-episode shoutouts, exclusive content, and much more. Once again, that's patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thanks again. And now let's get back to the show. Let's talk about the spatchcock tribble now.
Oh, do that.
I love that term spatchcocked, and I'm not a foodie. I'm not a great cook, but I think I was watching Bob's Burgers when I first heard that term and I had to look it up. And I love the idea of this. Sorry, folks listening, but this splayed open tribble on your plate. Thankfully de-haired, but
yes.
How did you come up with that one, with what exactly the components of the tribble are in that dish?
Well, I went back and forth because of my porg history with Star Wars and how I wasn't allowed to do porg, even though like they cook porg in the movie, I think. So like, really, I'm not sure what the deal is, but I guess it was not kid friendly or something. Like, but you put it in the movie, it's right there. Anyway. So for tribbles, I went back and forth because they're really cute and whatever else, but the short trek just sold me on it. And he's like, well, they're, you know, you take the hair off, they're pretty much just meat. And so it's like, all right. So, I mean, meatballs would have been obvious, but I already had meatballs. And so I just, you know, spatchcocking, for those who might not know, is sort of taking poultry, like a quail or something, and cutting it down the middle just enough that you can open it up and it takes less time to cook and is impressive presentation. The idea of doing that with what is essentially a meatball, a giant meatball, a round thing, just gave me the giggles, because it's like you're not really doing anything, you know, you're not changing how it looks. It's still just a round piece of meat at the end of the day. So, it's a very fancy name for what is a pretty straightforward thing, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But what? I did build a replicator that I photographed it in, so that's one of the
very cool
original series replicators.
So, yeah. Well, this is probably a good transition there then, because that's one thing that jumped out to me, of course, is the photography in the book too. Ooh. There's so many great photos, and like opening up and seeing the grapok sauce and just that bold red color. Hats off. Who did the photography for this?
I did.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Very cool. Yeah.
Thank you. No, it you know, my usual comfort zone for food photography is very much Game of Thrones, you know, rustic and pewter and kind of dirty looking. So this was a very far cry from that. It's very clean lines and good lighting. It's not a candle in sight. I had to start with a lot of dishware and cutlery sourcing. But even that was fun, you know, pulling screenshots and saying, all right, don't let me down, internet. Like, where did they get those really cool forks from Enterprise? And course the internet delivers. But I can tell you from experience now that if you watch T'Pol eating in Enterprise and she's doing these dainty little teeny bites, it's not a Vulcan thing. It's just the forks are obnoxious to use. They are the worst forks for actual utility that I've ever encountered. So it's
wow,
needs must, but she pulls it off completely.
That's excellent. I feel like that's a theme in Star Trek. Like some of those mugs on Deep Space Nine with those huge flared bases and stuff. I feel like they'd be like, I don't know what the inside's like. I don't know if that flared base actually fills with liquid, but if it does, like that last little bit of coffee must be impossible to get. Right.
Drinking from a beaker, essentially.
You'd, exactly.
Slosh, I think you'd be in danger of. But
well, First Contact Day Salmon. I love that we have an actual recipe for that now. And, you know, Lower Decks references, that's enough to get me on side for anything. Yeah. I love that.
I adore Lower Decks. I cannot get enough of it. We're rewatching it with a friend now, and it just, I laugh until I cry almost every single episode. It's just, it's both a love letter to all of Star Trek and making fun of it, but in the most heartfelt, loving way possible. It's so good. Lower Decks and Picard had just come out when I was wrapping up, like last couple of weeks maybe before my final deadline of recipe submission. I was like, well, I've got to get something in there from these. I can't not. I mean, with Strange New Worlds now, the cookbook is woefully, you know, out of date already. You know, it comes out tomorrow. But it's just like, no. but as you said, maybe there's room for more later.
Oh, that would be great. Well, that kind of brings me back to my next question, because I was curious while I was reading this, which presented the bigger challenge for you? Was it hard to come up with recipes and dishes because there were too few references and you kind of had to like see what there was and work with it? Or was the opposite the problem? Was there so much that you couldn't get everything you wanted to in the book?
Well, it's weirdly sort of a mix. Like there's a wealth of information. I've got a running list now from all the shows post deadline that I'm updating just in case. So on the one hand, you know, I've got pages and pages of things that didn't make it into this, including, you know, a couple of the recipes that got away that I just couldn't quite get there in time. So you've got that, but you also, as you sort of touch on, there's not a lot to go on for a lot of these. You know, maybe it's a great sounding name and that is it. And so that's kind of intimidating in its own way. And so trying to navigate that and say, well, do we see it on screen at all? Do we even have a color to try to match? But then sometimes, you know, Plomeek soup we see looks four different ways throughout the course of a couple of different seasons. So that one, I just went with what's the prettiest one, the original. We get a nice pink color, go with that. You know, not the sort of drab, olive-y, soupy, very boring looking color later. I guess that ends up being Plomeek a la Christine Chapel. So that works.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, the sources really blew me away because, you know, I think we as Star Trek fans sometimes, I'm trying not to be rude to other people's works and that kind of thing, but very surface level stuff sometimes where it's like, let's put the Star Trek name on it. Let's, you know, get a few references from a few shows and stuff. But as I'm flipping through this, I'm seeing like, oh, this was mentioned in Star Trek Online. Oh, wow. And then I get to Kimden Rolls and the source is the Star Trek The Next Generation ebook novella, Slings and Arrows, The Insolence of Office. And I mean, it's kind of a niche of Star Trek fans that read the novels, and it's probably a niche of Star Trek fans that read the ebook exclusives when they came out back then. Right. So that blew me away. What was what was the process of kind of finding those really obscure references that the average fan might not even have come across before?
Well, I think that actually it touches on your last question, which is, what do you do when there's not that much to go on, right? Mm. After I did a bunch of my balancing, I realized I didn't have enough bread, you know, in the bread section or that sort of baked good kind of things. And I didn't have any rolls specifically. You know, you can turn any bread into rolls. But I wanted something kind of showy. And, you know, back to memory alpha, memory beta, Kimden rolls. All right, so it's Betazoid. Already, you know, we're also low on Betazoid foods over here. So that would sort of tick two of those boxes, but we don't know much about it because it's just listed. And I think not even really described. But I think some of the magic of fictional food descriptions is that even when it's not described, you know, they don't say, oh, well, it's swirled bun of purple and white dough that's pillowy, soft, yada, yada. It's just listed somewhere probably in like the description of a meal. You still think to yourself, well, I wonder what that is. I wonder what that tastes like. What does Betazoid food taste like anyway, you know? So it's sort of fun to try to answer some of those questions in a small way.
Well, and I love in those cases, you're able to have a bit of fun with it too, because these are really striking, this kind of, like you said, purple and white swirled fluffy dough. And like, I don't know what it'll taste like, but I want to eat it. Right. It looks so good.
Well, and I really wanted this recipe collection to be visually striking as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for, you know, combining different dishes together, whether it's the Norellian what's it bread. It's like a pesto swirl, is fabulous tasting with any soup.
That looks really good too.
Looks really cool on the plate. You know, you've got your bowl of soup and you've got your like crazy swirly bread over here. So things like that. And that was the intent with the basic section at the beginning too. You know, not only do you have sauces that are incorporated into other recipes, but a number of garnishes. So if you want to make a dessert and stick like one of the bubble sugar garnishes on top, that instantly elevates it and really makes it Instagrammable or something.
Yeah, I really want to like present my wife with a bowl of ice cream with one of those purple ones stuck in the top. I think it would look so cool.
Rippleberry ice cream. It's pretty straightforward.
That's true too. Yeah, absolutely. So were there any particular favorites that jumped out that, you know, maybe you had to put a little bit of extra work into or something, but when it came out, you were just like, oh, that is perfect.
The Quadro Triticale salad, I am most proud of. I love that. I kind of want to just print the photo and frame it and just stick it on a wall, because that to me is like peak Star Trek food. And that was inspired by just sort of a throwaway eating scene almost in Discovery. In that, Captain Lorca is, you know, slurping down these tentacles as part of his salad, and you're both horrified and intrigued about what it is he's eating. And there are a lot of separate components in that recipe that all go together. But in the end, it's just like, I really like that one.
Oh, that's awesome. That's one that I notice is a 4 out of 4 pips difficulty. Yes.
Separate components are especially tricky, but you know, you make the topping, you make the little carrot tendrils, you make the like crispy tweel thing, and there's a dressing. So there are a lot of moving parts, but you know, none of them, it's not like puff pastry from scratch kind of difficulty. It's just getting all your ducks in a row.
One dish that I'm actually really glad, unless I missed it, that I didn't see in this book based on the cast's reaction to it was, I don't know if you remember Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. They served, and it turns out the prop was dyed blue lobster meat that they served the Klingon.
I remember that meal.
Yeah. And apparently it was terrible and you know, probably sitting under hot studio lights for hours or something. Yeah. I'm actually thankful that I didn't see that dish going through here.
Well, I was tempted. Nothing says alien space food like blue.
Mm-hmm.
I played with a couple of, not the lobster meat, but I think there are also like pearl onions that are dyed blue. And I was playing with those as maybe a like a cocktail garnish, but never quite got anywhere with that.
Yeah.
I've shelved that for maybe the next go around. We'll see. But I promise you, I will not include blue lobster meat ever. Nobody needs that.
No, yeah.
Although I heard the sort of similarly, the Jumja sticks in DS9, I guess they made one batch early on and then they just reused those same Jumja sticks. They kept them in the fridge, you know, for the rest of DS9 filming, which is impressive and horrifying.
Yeah. Terrifying, absolutely.
Yes. Ooh. Yeah. And that was one that got away from this collection. I wanted to include it. I made it once and they were perfect. The right shape, the right consistency. And I didn't take notes and I could never manage it again. It just turned into like goo puddles.
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
Yeah. So next time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm so eager to try Klingon blood wine. That is an interesting, the Ractigino, I'm not sure about the whole egg in there. Like
it sounds worse than it is. It's actually, it makes a very mellow, beautifully clear coffee when you're done. That is also really nice iced. It is suitably Klingon looking when it is brewing up in the pot. And it's fairly horrifying. I readily admit that. But super tasty coffee. So
excellent. Yeah, well, I might have to give that a try too, for sure.
See, the little Easter egg ingredient in the blood wine includes a dash of prune juice, of course.
Yes. Thank you. I was going to mention that. That's so great.
You know, I kind of figure, you know, Guinan gives Worf prune juice, obviously. He says, this is a drink for warriors. And we think that's funny because we do not think that way of prune juice here on Earth, generally. But I thought, well, why would he say that unless it reminds him of something that is, in fact, a drink for warriors? So stands to reason. Maybe it reminds him ever so slightly of blood wine. So.
That's excellent. I like that. So, and that just goes to show the thought that's going into this. It's not just like, let's, you know, just do this for fun. You know, you're really thinking these things through and like from a logical in-universe perspective. And that really comes across, I think, in these.
Oh, good. Well, and the Klingon food especially and drink, you know, it's because of the attention to detail and accuracy. It's not necessarily something you're going to dig into every day. now, it hasn't made it into our steady dinner rotation. The look of betrayal on my then one-year-old's face when I served her gah was to be treasured forever. But I think it is appropriately strange to Klingon food and worth trying once.
So. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, too, is the majority of these recipes are actual usable, interesting dishes. And I think a lot of times, you know, there'll be compromises on the edibility of something in order to make it, you know, look alien or fit something. But like of all the recipes I've read, like all of them so far are ones that like, ooh, I'd love to try that. I'd really want to. I think that could work, you know, and I think that's really a benefit to this book. And like, it's going on my shelf with the other cookbooks. It's not going to go with my Star Trek fiction books.
Oh, ooh, that's, I like that. Putting together any recipe, let alone a collection of recipes, there's always a balance that's very tricky to navigate, I think, between complexity to make, weirdness of ingredients, and taste and appearance, right? And you're trying to hit sort of that very middle bit of that four-part Venn diagram where it looks amazing, tastes great or good enough for the one time through, you know, it's edible, but also, you know, has to be canon, has to as you've said, you know, not just be a name stuck on there. It has to feel rooted in that world.
I was curious, there have been other, or at least one other that I can think of, Star Trek cookbooks in the past. Mm-hmm. There was one with Neelix on the cover.
Yep.
And then also, you know, Star Trek The Experience in Las Vegas kind of played around with some dishes and drinks and that sort of thing. Were there any kind of influences from any of those in these, or is this from scratch, totally built from the ground up?
It's mostly from scratch. However, some of those did inform choices I made. Like the Neelix cookbook, I think is great. And it, you know, that's what fans have been cooking out of for 20 years. Like, and so I mean, that's amazing. And people love it. They, you know how rare it is to see people still tweeting about a cookbook from 20 years ago, like, almost every day. It's amazing. That's a real feat. And what I love about that is you get a glimpse at the actors, you get a glimpse at the characters, and you get a glimpse behind the scenes. But it feels to me a little bit like it can't quite make its mind up about what it wants to be because it's trying to do everything. But personally, I loved the behind the scenes bits. And I did pull some tidbits from there, like when building the Romulan ale, you know, they used a blue sports drink at some point for the on-screen Romulan ale. So I said, all right, well, what if we incorporate that into this recipe? That sounds fun. If I am ever lucky enough to get to go to set, I'll be like, oh, hello, celebrities. Show me to your props department. Like, I just want to go follow someone around and like hold things for them for several days. And that would be my dream come true. I just want to see the stuff and how it all works. So things like that. Yeah. You know, and people, I think, only ever had very positive things to say about the going to Quark's in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad I made it about 2 months before they closed. Some friends and I
well
went.
Done. Yeah.
Well, you say 20 years later, people are still talking about that cookbook. I never actually had a copy of that one, but I'm so happy to have this one. And I really hope in 20 years, people are still tweeting about recipes and trying new things from this book, as well as its many follow-ups. Let's just put that out in the universe.
It's a great time to be a Trek fan. So.
Oh, it so is.
Plenty of new material to cook through pretty soon.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I'm looking forward to your take on Pike's pasta mama, I think he made in one episode.
Right? It's like nobody can make leftover pasta look that good. That just looks fabulous.
So yeah, the book is released on September 20th. As we're recording that's tomorrow. As the episode comes out, it should be yesterday. So if people want to follow you online or check out what you're up to, where can they best do that?
Twitter is probably easiest. I'm at Crossroads, which is my original food blog from Game of Thrones, but also the website is a good landing place. I talk a little bit more there with some images about sort of side-by-sides of in-screen or on-screen dishes and how I translated that into the cookbook, things like that. As people are cooking, no matter how many sets of eyes we get on a cookbook, there's always one something that falls through the cracks in terms of little copy editing mistakes. So if I find any of those, I also have a list of errata on the website that people can refer back to. But I think we did a pretty darn good job with this one. So I have not yet found any little blips. So fingers crossed.
Looks pretty great to me. One of my favorite authors has a saying that his best way of finding an error in a book is to get the box of author copies, take off the first copy, randomly open to a page, and there it is.
I like that. That seems very true.
Yeah. But so September 20th is when people can pick up this book, and it's available, I'm assuming, anywhere you get books, Amazon, absolutely, local bookstores.
You got it. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I look forward to hearing what people think of this because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent. So.
Me too. Well, I look forward to hearing what you dive into first for cooking.
Yeah, I'm excited. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll have to have you back when volume 2 comes out.
Sounds good. Perfect. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you all so much for listening to this interview. I had a lot of fun talking to Chelsea. And like I said, I'm really excited to try some of the recipes in this book. Maybe I'll bring that up on a future episode of Positively Trek, give one of these a try, and let y'all know how it turned out. All that's left for me now is to thank everyone once again for listening, and a special thank you to the Patreon supporters of the podcast. You really do make these episodes possible. Thank you so very much. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Twitter at Kertrats, that's K-E-R-T-R-A-T-S, youtube.com/Kertrats Productions. And of course, you can find the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Positively Trek, and on Facebook in the Positively Trek discussion group. If you'd like to support the podcast, patreon.com/Positively Trek is where you can do that. Once again, thank you to our supporters and to all of you for listening. I'll see you in the next episode. Until then, as always, stay positive.
And only Tribbles has the taste kids love. Parents love that Tribbles are packed with 18 essential vitamins and minerals. And Edward.
Tribbles contain more human DNA than any other leading brands. That's the building blocks of life.
Override your replicator safety protocols and set it for Tribbles. Original, Peri Berry, and new Spicy Ranch.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.